Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad you chose to join us. Tonight our topic is The Way Home to Love, and our guest tonight is Marisha Ducharme. We're going to bring her on in just a minute. But I wanted to just take a second and take a few steps back and look at what's going on in our collective consciousness. We're in such curious times. Here we are in the last quarter of 2017, and still no flying cars. You know, a lot of what we were promised as kids hasn't come around the bend, but I think one of the really curious things that for pretty much everybody on the planet will be, what will our divine potential look like? If we look at the mythology of our human condition on Earth, the vast majority of it tends to be kind of a 3D model of what living looks like, a 3D model of human existence. I suggest there have been episodes, eras on the planet in the past, perhaps the Vedic era, perhaps the days of Atlantis, when there was an exceptional consciousness as the norm on the planet. But now I don't have a firsthand account of those episodes lately. I'm sure it's all recorded in the Akashic history of planet Earth. But boy, how do you look at our episode? Here we are, a planet of over 7 billion people, and the collective consciousness is coming out of the quagmire, and people are awakening up to their divinity. How cool is that? See, what would happen if Jesus had Twitter? I mean, what would happen if the Buddha had Snapchat? I mean, or Krishna had 3D printing? What I'm getting at is, when you can understand the notion of infinite potential, infinite possibilities behind every single one of us, this divine spark at the core of us, and then you look at the platform that we have now, you can do a tweet from your phone at the restaurant while you're waiting for your order, and a million people can see it within a minute. I mean, Shazam, this is impressive stuff. Now, what I'm talking about is the 3D platform that this consciousness is running on. But I suggest people like you, people like me, when we open ourselves up to the inspiration and we say, what is possible in this situation with such a rich, fertile environment to create, I think we're going to see consciousness take it to a whole new level that our mythology doesn't even touch very well, that even our superhero movies just poke at with a stick. This is a very exciting time to be alive. And what's going to give you the advantage of tapping your own divine potential is your imagination, your creativity, your beliefs. It's done unto you as you believe. Your sense of divine entitlement, if that makes sense. There's a conditioning that preps you, if you will, for the divine idea of what it means to be a human being anywhere in the universe. And that's what I really like about our topic tonight. Marisha really knows her stuff, and she has such a established history working with this material. Her language is very clean. It's very sincere. It's very heartfelt. And it's very, very powerful. What I like about bringing episodes like this to you is we're working with the human consciousness on this planet. we're talking about human potential when we have these episodes. And I suggest to you, most of the deities, the archangels, the gods, are pretty much hands-off when it comes to actually reaching over our shoulder and changing the human paradigm. It's going to be through flesh and bones that happens. And so let's get to our topic tonight. The Way Home to Love, A Guide to Peace in Turbulent Times. That's the name of Marisha's latest book, and her background is very impressive. She is the founder and resident teacher of the Snow Dragon Sanctuary in Meredith, New Hampshire. She is a unique combination of mystic, teacher, and author, and has guided and inspired countless students over many years. She is a dedicated practitioner of unity and consciousness. She has distilled more than three decades of study, teaching, and depth of practice into her teachings and writings. Join me in welcoming Marisha to the show. Welcome to the show, Marisha.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, when I looked over your book, it seems like it's such a heartfelt endeavor. The words, the topic, the wisdom behind it seems to flow from a very sincere heart. Can you share with us what brought you to writing this book?
Well, this book was it had a life of its own. As I was teaching at the sanctuary and doing discourses, one of the practitioners asked if she could begin to record the discourses so she could listen to them again later. And so she did that, and then eventually she felt very strongly that she wanted to transcribe them. And then eventually she came to me and she said, you know, I think these discourses could help other people. Let's put them together and let's do a book. And I had always had that desire, but never had the time really to do it. And so the time presented itself, and you know, we took the discourses and we edited them, and I added some things here and there, and so that's how the book was born. It was material that was, you know, coming through and for teaching. And Now it's in the book, which is very exciting because, you know, it's something that you can read and you can go back to again and again, and so I'm very happy that the book is out for people now.
So, what was your intent? I mean, what was your intent for the book to accomplish?
Well, I think that you know, my own study and my own practice has transformed my life and, you know, my spiritual path and also my spiritual work as a teacher. It's been my inner quest, and it's been my life's work. And I feel that everyone, we're all the same. We all have the same human potential. And the only difference is that we all know it in varying degrees. Perhaps some people are unconscious about it, or for some people it's on a semi-conscious level. Others are struggling, and then others are sailing. And so with the book, I'm really hoping that it will help people to really find the doorway of the territory within themselves, which is where everything is. And to really spend a lot of time there because it's the source of everything. You know, we look outside of ourselves so much and we think, well, oh, it's over here, or oh no, it's over there, or gee, it's in this relationship, or it's in that job. And the truth is that it's not outside of ourselves at all. We already have it. Thou art that. You know, we already embody what it is that we're so deeply searching for. And so my intention was just to, you know, help people remember this and encourage, inspire people to have that relationship with themselves in that inner territory in that very, very deep way through spiritual practice.
Well, how have you noticed as you've had your years of sharing these ideas and principles, what have you noticed as far as a personal change in people's lives as they practice these principles?
Well, I've seen people, you know, I've seen people, of course, go through life the way we all go through life, which is, you know, there are always periods of challenge and transition. Then there are periods of stability and kind of more of an even keel. But what I've really noticed is that when people have certain practices that they can use, they mature their emotional bodies. They quiet the mental body. They are able to make a connection with the spiritual body, with, you know, the divine, with a divine light. And so it's a beautiful process. And I think it's the process that it's the same for everyone. It's just that we're all going through it. We're just going through it, in, as I said before, in slightly different levels. So I've seen it, I've seen people benefit so greatly from it, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually.
Nice. I like that. Mm-hmm. Well, if I've been on a spiritual practice and I've gone to a church or whatever, and I've kind of perhaps reached a plateau where I don't feel like I'm making any more progress. How does one measure their spiritual journey? I mean, is there a divine yardstick, and you can see if you've grown enough to be calling yourself in the? I mean, where's the measuring stick to tell? Because many people, social media gives you a snapshot of so many people's minds that, the term awakened or enlightenment has been used by every caliber of person on the planet, I'm pretty sure. I mean, how does one really get an idea if there's more to learn, more to grow?
I think that... my teacher's teacher said something very simple that took me many years to understand. And he said, may no one be the least little bit unhappy ever. And I realized that it was possible to be happy all of the time. And I'm not talking about, you know, a superficial happy-go-lucky. I'm talking about a very deep and abiding place of fulfillment and peace and love inside. So those words really showed me that I have work to do, right? So or anyone has work to do. Because if we're in conflict, then there is an absence of love. And so those conflicts then become the work that the spiritual work comes to us through those challenges and conflicts. And then it's on us to be able to undergo that alchemical process inside and turn our lead, you know, really into gold and end up in a very simple place, which is being able to live life day in and day out in a beautiful, extraordinary way while it looks very ordinary. But so that we can enjoy each day and be grateful for each day and feel happy, fulfilled inside of ourselves each day.
I like that. So how do you look at what the media is showing you as the face of humanity and find a place of peace within that? How do you find peace in with so much upheaval?
Well, see, that's the bullseye, really, is how to find the calm and the grounding in the midst of a storm. It's like the eye of the storm. You really do have to be able to transcend the chaos. You know, there's polarity, and the chaos comes when a fight starts. There's conflict, and you know, this person says one thing over here, and another person says the opposite thing, and we see the culminations in war, and you know, in politics, and in so many ways that we look at. But each of us has a point of power within us, no matter what is happening around us. And so I refuse to be taken off my point of peace. I choose that for myself. It's possible. I know where to go and what to do, and everyone can do the same thing. So it's really a matter of choice of how we want to, you know, walk through this world. And we can walk through in beauty, and we can trust love, and we can have courage, or, you know, we can not trust, and we can be afraid. But again, that's what I want everyone to know, is that each person has that ability to make that choice.
I think when people are afraid, they want to look in their spiritual toolbox and find out that it's okay to spiritually flog somebody into divinity, but I guess it just doesn't work that way. you said that you've for yourself, when you live in that place of peace within you, that ocean of peace within you, that when there is turmoil, you were mentioning that you choose not to leave that peace. And well, how is it that it's such a choice, such a decidable choice for you?
Well, you know, there's a book that you may have heard of, by Viktor Frankl, and it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And he was at Auschwitz and during World War II, and he was in line for the gas chamber, and he was terrified and he was angry. And at that moment, he began to pray, and he had an epiphany. And what he realized was that he had a choice within himself as to how he met his death. And he decided, this all happened very quickly, but he decided that he did not want to go to die being angry and afraid. And so he began to, standing right there in line, forgive his perpetrators. And something happened. He got taken out of line and was sent on an errand. And he continued to cultivate this inspiration that had come to him. And something would happen to him every day where he wouldn't end up in the line that would go in the gas chamber. But the point isn't that he necessarily lived. It's that he chose the consciousness in the face of death that brought him the most peace. And I think that's how I think every one of us has the same choice. It doesn't mean that the chaos is going to stop. It doesn't mean that difficult things won't happen. It really is going more to the point of how we are able internally to meet these challenges. And it's not a simple process. I mean, and when I say it's not simple, I mean that you have to make a commitment to yourself, and you have to keep that consciousness alive and well, so that you remember what it is your choice can be, and then you can begin to enter into the process of that level of healing with inside of yourself. And you know, we do it through meditation, we do it through witness consciousness, and we feel everything while we're undergoing this process of transformation. But ultimately, even though it can get dark and messy and sticky sometimes, it's transformational. And if we really support ourselves, we can begin to find those places of grounded strength and peace.
Well, I really like that. You talk about the epiphany he had, and he changed his consciousness, turned it on a dime in the moment, and all of his experiences after that episode were transformed by him changing his consciousness. Now, you had just mentioned the term witness consciousness. Do you want to give us some insight to what that means?
Yes. So when we go within to the territory within, which means that we withdraw our senses from the outer external world so that we're really unplugging, and we are going within. So we literally close our two eyes and we sit in a comfortable position. Sometimes it's on the floor with our legs crossed. It could be in a comfortable chair. But we begin to go within and we learn, and I talk about it a lot in the book, we learn how to breathe. We learn how to consciously breathe, which is really, really different than unconsciously breathing. Everybody breathes unconsciously every day. But breathing consciously creates a bridge between ourselves and the divine. And so we begin to learn how to breathe. We use that breath to carry us in. We close our eyes so that we're closing off that outer stimulation. And then what happens is we start to see that we have a place within us which can watch. And we can watch and we can notice the sound of our breathing in and out. We can watch and observe the sensation of what the breath feels like. And then as we continue in our process, perhaps one day there's a difficulty at work and we come home and we're upset, and then we go into our meditation. Whatever it is, it arises in us. And we bring the breath to whatever sensations arise. And we neither repress, and nor do we go into a process of expression. But the witness consciousness is the part of us that's watching everything. We're watching the thoughts that we're having come in and go out and come back again, the conversations that we hold in our head. We're watching feelings arise, whatever they may be. And so the witness consciousness is neutral. It watches and it observes, but it stays neutral and doesn't judge anything. And so the witness consciousness is where we learn to take nothing personally because it's so neutral. And when that happens, our emotions quiet down, our thoughts quiet down, and we begin to enter into a resonance of stillness, of peace, and love. And so the witness consciousness is a wonderful practice and a powerful tool for undergoing transformation.
Well, I like that. And you talked about stillness, peace, and love. And you've talked about going to that place of peace within your own being and choosing peace when upheaval comes. From that place of stillness, that place of peace, that place of love, does that, from that, when you're in alignment with that consciousness, how does that change your outlook on your life?
Well, how it's changed my outlook on my life is when something is challenging me, and I do the process, I go into the process of meditation, transformation, witness consciousness, it's changed my life by allowing me to feel this really powerful connection with God, and to really know that I'm not the initiator. And it's where I began to learn how, you know, to train myself how to connect, you know, how to connect and to, how to live in my soul and spirit rather than in my ego. I think that's the most powerful thing I've learned.
Very nice. That sounds extremely powerful. Can anyone realize this inner transformation? I mean, just is it's there for everyone, or is there some exceptions to this?
No, I don't think there are any exceptions. Our consciousness, you know, we're all the same. We're human beings, and so, you know, we have a physical body, which is very similar. We have an energy body and a vibrational human constitution, which is all very similar. And, you know, it's just like training. If you said, gee, I'm going to get physically fit, and you decided that you were going to start, you know, walking for 30 minutes every day, and then you built up to an hour, and you were going to add some aerobic exercise, you would notice that your physical body started to respond because you were in training with it. You were practicing regularly and making the commitment, and then your physical body gets stronger, you know, you get healthier, you feel better. It's the same thing with the spiritual body. And so anybody at any level can begin exactly where they are.
Which is probably handy, because that makes it applicable at any time in their life, no matter where they are in that journey.
All times, all places, and under all circumstances. That's what I always say, you know, across the board. And yes, it doesn't matter what's going on. There's any time is the time, right?
I like that. So we find that inner peace. We find that that ocean of love that our own soul, our own divinity has for us. And then we turn on the damn TV, and all this karmic crap comes out. And we drop back down into our minds and go into some reactive patterning. What do you do to heal the reactive mind?
Well, I always recommend that you spend you spend a fair amount of time in the territory within, so that there's a balance between what's going on in the outer world, and then you're returning to your source to access what's going on in your inner world, which is your doorway, right, to that place. And how you heal the reactive mind is through a process that you commit to of practice that is really alchemical. And it begins with the breath. It's sustained by the breath. And the breath never leaves. You always stay connected to the breath, and you breathe consciously. The breath has light in it, and the light is the fire. And the fire is what purifies and transforms the dross, or the heavy stuff, or the, you know, the unconscious habitual patterns that you mentioned. And so it's a repetitive process, but you're giving up an unconscious habitual repetitive process for a conscious repetitive process. And one has, you know, very positive effects, and one has, you know, spinning your wheel the karmic wheel effect.
Well, I like that. Well, so I would reckon that the more you do that, the more you go through that practice, the easier and perhaps quicker you can return back to that place of center, that place of inner knowingness, inner peace. So
yeah.
It would seem like as you proceed on your journey, is there a tipping point where you just choose not to go back into fear? You just choose not to go into reactions and kind of like a breakthrough moment in your life where the sense of peace and love from within your own being is the primary and dominant feeling in your life?
I think that the lag time shortens in between, you know, when you're starting out and you're practicing, perhaps in the beginning you don't feel so connected and you're not feeling that peaceful and you're really having to, you know, work with those levels of unconscious transformation inside of yourself. But as you persist, as you persevere through time, you undergo a training, and then your consciousness knows more quickly. You know, you don't even have to think about it. You will just go right into the breath. You will know where to go very, very quickly because it saves your life. It really brings everything you need right to you.
I like that. So in this process, how does love fit into this? Trusting love, discovering love, embodying love.
Well, my teacher's teacher, his name was Bapaji, Swami Kripalvanandaji, and he says that love is the absence of conflict. And so I'm not so much talking about a romantic love, but I'm talking about a universal love, a feeling of an absence of conflict. And an absence of conflict is love and peace. And so when we return to the breath and we stabilize the polarity, you know, the conflicting forces that are happening, when we can stabilize that, that's when we can connect with that, really, the current of beauty that's here no matter what's happening. You know, I had to drive out of state today, and I had to get on the highway and, you know, get in traffic and do all sorts of stuff. But I can do my practice when I'm, you know, driving down the highway, and that's what I did. You know, it's stressful, everybody's speeding, and it doesn't really matter, you know, what the situation is. You can be accessing that energy and actually unifying with that energy no matter what's happening around you. And so love, you know, what I found through the years working with people was that at the bottom of physical problems, at the bottom of emotional problems, at the bottom of mental problems, and at the bottom of spiritual disconnect, was really a very deep need in each human being, in each soul, to love and to be loved. And so I began to see how so much of the crisis and the challenge and the karma that we create for ourselves is just unconscious, habitual, repetitive patterns coming back to us on that karmic wheel. And, you know, how do we break the cycle? Well, we break the cycle by learning how to not react in the same way over and over again. And when we learn how to not react, we can change our reaction, believe it or not, by stopping everything and literally breathing for 30 seconds consciously. If when you find yourself wanting to, you know, go into reaction about somebody says something and you get offended, instead of instantly reacting the way you would normally react, just take a moment, connect consciously with the breath. And I have some different breathing exercises in the book to try. That changes your chemistry. It actually breaks the reaction. It breaks the emotional repetitive action. So therefore, it changes your chemistry. And you can't change consciousness without changing your chemistry. So when you change your chemistry through the breath, and now you have broken that emotional reaction, you can now respond neutrally and without a charge. And all of that is a result of practicing and maturing your emotional body and your mental body, and by returning to the place of connection with your spiritual union and communion.
Well, that sounds like a very powerful technique. I know people dropping into reaction, a reactive patterning, can show up in relationships, it can show up at work, it can show up in traffic, it can show up just commingling as we go throughout our days. So as you say, to catch yourself before you drop into that process, and then use the breath to dissipate the momentum of a reactive pattern coming on, you're literally mm-hmm. breaking that cycle with such a little very simple practice, like you said, that could be performed anywhere.
It's so simple, most people can't grasp it.
Yeah, we want it to be hard, damn it. I mean, this is a, you know, karma's... Well, you know, sometimes what I like to do is step back and then step back again and take about 10 more steps back and look at my life and my lifetimes from the perception of my soul. It's like, you know, it took forever for us to create villains. It took us forever to create this karmic quagmire. And although it's part of our past, the hero archetype, if we were all big ass divine beings walking around living in unconditional love, there's no hero paradigm. There's no Dick Tracy. There's no Superman. There's no Jesus. There's no, I mean, our souls come to this physical plane to have human experiences. Mm. And boy, howdy, have we had train wreck after train wreck in our collective past. But those train wrecks scar us deep enough to feel powerless, to experience hopelessness, to experience the victim mentality. You know, the whole idea behind a hero is a hero can see an outcome that nobody else can see. He has an exceptional perception of what seems to be a hopeless paradigm. And so whenever we come into this whatever the human quagmire is today, you turn on the TV, you go on social media today, and it's XYZ, you know, wet cleanup aisle five, bring them up. And from the soul's perspective, the transformation we're all going through right now is an exceptional human experience. This didn't happen mm-hmm. 200 years ago, 2000 years ago, you know, it's happening today. And although people going through it are wringing their hands and pulling their hair out because there's so much upheaval, it's really quite an exceptional time to be alive.
It is. It's an extraordinary time to be alive. And I really look at it as a collective initiation. You know, in every initiation, there are tests and trials. And humanity has reached a collective, we really have reached the our collective karma, and we're living in times of consequence, and everybody's in it together, and no one can escape it. So there's this element that while we are individually going through our own, you know, our own process and our own lives and our own transformation, well, the whole planet's trying to do it together. And so there's this great, great purification happening, and there's so many tests and trials, and that's initiation. And I don't know how it's going to turn out. I know what I have to do, you know, in it. And then one of the things that I know I have to do is I'm inspired to share ways that can ground and stabilize, you know, the chaos.
Right. When you're doing that, I mean, you're doing it with the sanctuary, you're doing it with your book. I mean, just mm-hmm. the title of your book, The Way Home to Love, A Guide to Peace in Turbulent Times. So this way home to love, is experiencing love in this life really something we can feel like we can pull off?
Yes. My answer is yes. But we, you know, you have to be willing to, you have to be willing to do the work. You know, everything is earned. We have to earn our way. And so, you know, we've lost our way, and we have to find our way. The way is there, and it's not outside of ourselves. It's inside of ourselves. And, you know, my teacher, Gurudev, wrote some beautiful words, and he said, "That which I am searching for is me. That which acts as an enemy is me. And that which is attempting to get rid of the self-destructive me is also me. I am the obstruction, and I am the way." And so I think when we realize that it's up to us, we are what we are looking for. We have everything now, and whether or not we're going to wake up and really do that inner work is the question of the day. You know, the earth is asking us to wake up. Everything around us is asking us to wake up.
The divine alarm clock.
Yes.
Some of us are maybe a little more karmically hungover than others. I'm sure to some people it feels like karmic waterboarding.
Yes, I'm sure it does.
There's in the last couple of weeks, I've heard some incredible stories of how people are experiencing life. And, you know, it for me, it just stirs my heart even deeper to hold a place of compassion for humanity. It doesn't matter what the truth is. If people can't see the truth and they feel a sense of hopelessness, it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. That's human suffering, period. It doesn't matter if it's based in ignorance or not. It really doesn't matter. But to turn around and find that inner well of peace, that inner well of love, that inner well of compassion, and then turn around and engage life like you are. I mean, we were talking before the show started about when love comes calling. We didn't call it quite that, but after a while, you just refuse to say no to love, no to that higher calling, that higher wisdom within your own persona, your own being that says, well, what the hell? Why don't you try this on and do this and do that? And it takes some conditioning to really trust love and then to follow love without hindrance or hesitation. What have you found as far as your own life path as it relates to trusting that divine guidance within you?
Well, I have found that sometimes I've had to risk everything. That I have had to really risk everything. You know, we human beings really like to kind of set ourselves up so that we're comfortable and we, you know, we have some, like, you know, boundaries around us so that we know what they are, and we can try to, you know, manage everything and control everything. But the truth is that on the path of love, if you're going to be following guidance, you might be asked to turn on a dime. And, you know, you have to be ready to do that if you want to be taken by that stream of love. And so for me in my personal life, I've had a few times where life as I knew it ceased to exist from one day to the next, and I had to jump.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the deal. And so there were a few big times, and then there were many small times. And that's what it's like. It's like, you know, sometimes we have to give it all up and start a whole new current. And, you know, I know these hurricanes and these storms and these fires and all the things on the earth are really so difficult for people. But on some level, I've also heard some reports of people saying, you know, everything's gone, but I'm alive and I feel so grateful. And you know what? People are actually helping each other out. My faith is being restored in humanity and in human kindness. So, you know, there's a difficult side, but there's also something else that's emerging and being born. But it's so new to us that we don't know exactly what that is yet, because it just feels like chaos at this point. But there is a birth trying to come, you know, trying to happen.
Oh, sure. And it, you know, it karma tends to leave kicking and screaming. I mean, there's going to be more there's going to be more upheaval in the collective. We're certainly not over it yet, but
no.
Love, and specifically love through the human consciousness, is an extremely powerful paradigm for people to embody. Love is just exponentially more powerful than fear could ever hope to be. Fear can't exist by itself. It needs a consciousness to fuel it. But love, shit, love is everywhere. You can run as far as you can, and wherever you go, there it is. There's no escaping it, you know.
It's true.
Well, I don't want our time to run away from us. Speaking of running away, I want to be sure our listeners understand the work you're doing, your book, The Sanctuary. Can you give us a nice rundown as far as, do you work with people one-on-one? What kind of services, your book?
I do work with people one-on-one. You know, I do a lot of work with meditation and classes. I'm writing really full-time now. But the sanctuary is here. It's beautiful. We have a wonderful kind of natural oasis, and it's very healing because it's just nature at its best. And so that's a wonderful thing. And the book, The Way Home to Love, A Guide to Peace in Turbulent Times, you can just order it on Amazon very easily. You can also, if you want to find out more about the sanctuary, go to snowdragonsanctuary.com, and you'll be able to read a little bit about, you know, what the sanctuary is all about, who we are and what we do.
Very nice. The pictures I've seen of the sanctuary is just exquisite. It's just pregnant with nature at its finest. It hasn't been scarred by human intention. It's extremely peaceful terrain, and I can only imagine the experience it would be to spend time there and have such a peaceful environment to find, to mirror back to you the inner peace that's inherently within ourselves.
Mm. Yes, it's very powerful that way. You know, all of us journey from time to time into, you know, into places of nature, because nature is just so healing. It's so beautiful.
God has a nice touch. Well, so who's your ideal client?
I it's interesting because I was kind of talking about that on some level today, that my path has now led me to, you know, writing full time, and I'm seeing something wonderful happen. I'm seeing that the words in the book are helping people in a different way than how I worked for so many years beforehand. And so now I think that the perfect client is just someone who is inspired to read a spiritual book to get some inspiration in life and make some connection, and then is ready to dive in on one's own and begin to experience directly, this territory, this spiritual territory.
Well, very nice. Well, so what does the future look like for you? What do you see coming down the pike for you?
Well, what I see coming down the pike for me is more. I have to write more books. I have book two coming along. We're actually working on it right now. And the other thing I have a solar company that my husband and I run. When we came to Snowdragon Mountain, we designed and built all the buildings here at the sanctuary, and they're all off-grid. And so one of the things that we're very, very committed to is living, we live in northern New England in an off-grid home, which is totally solar. And so we educate people a lot on, returning to renewable living. And so I see that, I'm going to continue to do that as well.
Well, very nice. Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share with us?
Well, I first of all, I just would like to thank you for having me. It's been wonderful to be in these kinds of conversations. I open my heart and I surround the world. I send light out every day. And I hope that each one of us can remember that we really do have what we need, and we can make the connections that we need to make in order to be, peaceful, simple people and have a good life. And so, really that's my wish and my prayer for everyone.
Well, very nice. It's... The compassion you have in your heart is quite evident. You're walking your path. Your words are authentic. They're very graceful. You've been doing this for a while, and it shows in the work you're doing. I want to say thank you for what you're doing with your life. You're showing up. And I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
And thank you again.
We've been talking with Marisha Ducharme, and the topic tonight has been the way home to love. It's a curious thing when you start to embody love more and more. Love has a way of kicking your ass in such a divine and pleasant way if you give it the opportunity to. When a lot of times our egos can be quite intimidated by love, because perhaps we've been in, quote, love in the past, and whenever that fell apart, we felt all flavors of pain. But love in and of itself has no pain. It's our the empty aspects of ourself that love fills up when another human being loves us. And when that breaks away, the emptiness that was there to begin with returns, and it's kind of like when you're in a nice warm house, i.e. in the presence of love, you feel warm and nurtured and cared for, and then for some reason you have to go outside on a cold winter night when the wind's howling, all that warmth goes poof and you don't feel so good quite quickly. But love is such a mystery meat, if you will, in the sense that you can't really put your finger on it, because it's such a multidimensional, multifaceted arena of consciousness, in a sense that love always has the ability to expand. I suggest the expansion of the universe is expansion of divine love, looking for new and exciting ways for it to express itself. Where love by its very nature expresses in all forms of life, all walks of life, in every kingdom of life that there is on this planet and any other planet. But more specifically to you, love and from our own experience of it, self-love is something that is a very powerful thing to focus on, to learn how to love yourself more and more and more. People who have gone so far into the darkness, and if you're walking on this planet at this time in our human mythology, chances are you are a very old soul that has acquired karma over and over and over again. And then it's the way back home to love, which our guest tonight has so eloquently described, and I do recommend her book, to find our way back home to the inner love, that ocean of love that's within the center of all of us, to serenade it, to coax it, to give it opportunities to express in you, through you, as you, is something that will forever expand what it shows you. In other words, you can't exhaust love. You can't tire love. You can't empty love. Love is this magical elixir that has no opposite, that always has a new perception, a new way, a new opportunity to be expressed. Just lay on the lawn at night and look out into the stars, the billions and billions of stars that are probably mirrors of our own star in our own solar system, where there's just trillions of personas of divine consciousness finding new opportunities to express itself. The expression of love is something that, for myself, I can't tire of it. And I don't want to ever say no to love again. And it can really kind of put you on the spot, because from the ego's perspective, life can seem very volatile and quote dangerous, but our essence is absolute. There's nothing really to be afraid of when it comes to love. Hey, you know, you loved yourself. You listened to this episode on the way home to love. How cool is that? That's a step in that you've chosen to take in your life, to expose yourself to material that encourages the expansion of who you are, the healing of who you are, the alignment of the truth of who you are. You know, it's my pleasure bringing you shows like this. I love creating a platform where love can find its way into every nook and cranny of our human condition. I'm your host, Les Jensen. It's been my pleasure sharing this time with you. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.